Hello, this is Frankly Speaking. Today's program addresses the subject of religion in politics. Can the moral majority affect America's way of life? I'm Helen Ackerman for George Mason University. Church and state are constitutionally separated in the U.S., though this has not kept religious groups from expressing their opinions on political issues. The degree of involvement and the strength of the influence of these groups has varied, but few have brought themselves to the nation's attention to the degree of the Reverend Jerry Falwell and the moral majority. Their impact is such that even an ultra-conservative like Senator Barry Goldwater has expressed concern over their activities. In a recent Post interview, he said that he is sick and tired of such groups' attempts to influence his vote and commented that these growing religious factions are a divisive element that could tear apart the representative system should they gain enough strength. To talk today about what has given rise to such groups as the moral majority and the nature of their political impact is Dr. Joseph Semeca, chairman of the Department of Sociology at George Mason, and Dr. Martin Denies, who is a professor of philosophy and religion at the university. Dr. Semeca, do you think Barry Goldwater is right to be concerned about the activities of the moral majority?
Well, I think he's right because the moral majority represents, if not a single issue, type of politics, single issue types of politics, and Goldwater has had a much broader perspective on politics, and so that they do represent a threat to Goldwater, who would be considered an old right person. And I think we see this in the anti-abortion attitudes towards Sandra Day O'Connor and as justice, which precipitated Barry Goldwater's remarks to begin with.
You feel that was a moral majority type attitude that people were taking?
Definitely, that they were trying to keep her from being appointed a justice of the Supreme Court on the basis of a vote that she had made while a member of the state senate in Arizona on one issue. And it seems to me that that's one of the, would represent a real problem in American politics if we let groups like this dictate to us on the basis of one issue. And this is what Goldwater was responding to, and I think rightly so.
The term moral majority seems to have taken on a meaning beyond that of merely the group started by Jerry Falwell in 1979. What do we mean now when we talk about the moral majority?
I think we mean an attitude about the relationship between religion and politics. That attitude, as I understand it, being that political ideas and policy proposals and so forth follow from a religious tradition and have their validity because they follow from that tradition. I haven't been a careful student of Dr. Falwell, and I haven't been a careful observer of the moral majority, so much that I want to say would have the force of a hypothesis more than a certitude. But it does seem to me that we're talking about a movement in American society and politics today that views political notions as having legitimacy because of some kind of religious derivation.
Why do you think that this has happened at this particular time? These fundamentalist type groups have been around for many years. Why are they suddenly becoming so politically active?
Well, I see the moral majority as becoming so active because of their being tied in with what is called the electric church. And what we have is a number of ministers who are now reaching large audiences and have now begun to move into politics. Also, the term moral majority is a very catchy term. Does anyone really want to be an immoral minority member? And so this is very good public relations.
I think what some of the electric church people are doing, too, is tapping resentment against many cultural changes that have been going on regarding pluralism and morality and that sort of thing. A resentment that's been there for a long time, but now it's being tapped.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And also in terms of how much influence the moral majority had, they claim to have registered 2.5 million voters in the 1980 election, which probably is true. But again, one would have to look at how much of this was a resentment against Carter, for instance.
That's
how much
right.
of it was a resentment against liberalism, which is very difficult to defend given its track record. But that does not mean that all of a sudden that we're going to substitute a conservative politics, which has no track record. And given what I see from the Reagan administration, is going to have as poor, if not poorer, track record than liberalism.
What do you think the relationship between Reagan and the moral majority is?
It's a tenuous relationship.
Yes, I think so, too.
At best. He has come out in favor of many of the policies that the moral majority have put forth, that Falwell has put forth. But in his appointments and so on, I think that they feel that they have been slighted.
Yeah, I think Reagan wants to tap that base for political support, but at the same time not define himself with respect of allegiance to all of the notions that they would propose.
Is it generally accepted that they played a considerable role in him getting the presidential election?
Well, political scientists at their recent convention had mixed views on that, that there is a controversy. My feeling is that they did, but again, how much of it is anti-Carter or was anti-Carter and how much of it is pro-Reagan is very, very difficult to fathom. One of the things that was obvious at the election time, it was so close that none of the polls would call it, and all of a sudden there was this outpouring for Reagan, mm-hmm. which might very well have come over the Iran situation.
That's right.
Just very, very difficult to analyze.
My own intuitive hunch is that the moral majority did not play a major and significant role in the Reagan election, that they were perhaps a catalyst, but that certain other factors, resentment against Carter and his track record being the primary one, was much more important.
And I would also see the moral majority, and I think that one of their goals is to have an effect at the local level, where single issue can be much more important to candidates. On a national level, unless they're going to broaden themselves, I don't think that they're going to have that much of an effect in the future.
Dr. Denies, what is it that the moral majority and groups like it hope to achieve with their political activity?
I think they hope to achieve, and again, I'm attempting to put myself into a point of view, I think that they hope to achieve the restoration in society of certain values, or the respect for certain values that they consider very, very fundamental, and that they think of primarily in terms of a religious tradition.
What is it specifically that they're looking for?
I think they'd like to see prayer reinstated in the public schools. I think most moral majoritarians would be opposed to the Equal Rights Amendment and in support of an anti-abortion amendment to the Constitution. I think most moral majoritarians would like to see much stricter censorship regulations on what they would identify as pornographic materials. Those sorts of things in specific kinds of terms, those are just some examples, but they're ones that come to mind.
I get the feeling that with the moral majority that these things must also be achieved through the workings of the moral majority. Should it come, these things come to pass through some other political activity, they would not have the validity to that group.
The impression I get, and again it's just that, is a little bit different. I think that they don't believe these things will come to pass unless it's through the efforts of the moral majority. Not so much that they wouldn't deem them to be legitimate, did they arise through other means, but that they don't think they can unless they themselves push these programs or policies.
I think that basically they've been outsiders and now have discovered a way to influence the political process, and they are influencing it. What bothers me about the moral majority is I think that there is a lack of compassion on their part, which I think is also true of the new right. And I think that this goes against the religious tradition, and you may get a number of other churches and church members who are going to respond to them on this issue of compassion. And you're probably going to see this in some of the mainline churches who are going to be attacking the electorate church because of the audience they're taking away from them and so on. But again, I would see it going back to this notion of compassion. There seems to be very, very little compassion for people who are different among people in the moral majority. And as far as I'm concerned, this goes against Christian tradition.
And in that connection, I would think that other church leaders would also resent the claim on the part of the moral majority to be airing, quote-unquote, the Christian point of view. Because empirically, at least, it is not the case that there is the Christian point of view. There are rather a plurality of point of views that derive out of that tradition.
And I think that Jerry Falwell left himself open to a lot of criticism when he seemed to agree with, I think it was Bailey Smith, who was the head of the Southern Baptist Church, who claimed that, you know, God does not answer the prayers of Jews. And I don't know if he's repudiated the statement, but I have not seen him, and I think that this represents, again, a very short-sighted, narrow approach, and it bothers me as something that would come out of a Christian or a Judeo-Christian tradition.
Mm-hmm. How have the other more established religious groups reacted to him so far?
I think that it's hard to say. I mean, there have been some negative, but again, you're not going to get real battles yet because he is perceived as doing some good things, and he is. I mean, no one would say that, well, everything that the moral majority stands for is wrong. I mean, how could anyone be against the pornography or some of the pornography that's coming out? But where you're against it is in terms types of censorship that they hold. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. What you're against is the extremes to which they come out. And I think until this is fathomed, we really won't see that much opposition.
What's the difference about what the moral majority is trying to achieve politically and what any other lobbying group would do which was trying to promote an issue?
That's an awfully good question.
Probably not much.
I'm not sure that I have an awfully good answer.
Probably not much. I mean, one of the things that the new right and the moral majority have always stated is that single-issue politics has been part of our heritage. We have all of these lobbying groups, and what they're doing is they're doing a little better than some of the others. So I wouldn't see that much difference.
So they're getting some resentment,
give them credit.
Probably.
Except that, and I'm thinking as I talk right now, and that's always dangerous, other lobbying groups don't necessarily paint their opponents in the morally pejorative terms that I sometimes believe the moral majority does. Secular humanism, for example, is a very, very nasty word when a moral majoritarian uses it. And you're not supposed to want to be called that. Yea, indeed, you should feel ashamed if you're called that. I think there is this kind of dimension to moral majoritarian lobbying that lots of other instances of lobbying don't possess.
I think that's a good point, and to go back to what we opened the show on, that is really what Barry Goldwater was responding
that's
to.
That's right.
He felt that, you know, he was not going to be painted as immoral because he took a particular stand on certain issues.
That's exactly so.
Yes. Well, I can see we could talk about this for a lot more time, but I'm afraid we've run out. Thank you both for being with us today. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Helen Ackerman for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.